Hi, folks. This is Jeff Altman, and I rained on the Flash's parade as the weather wizard on Legends of the Superheroes. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, comic book fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, speaking to you from the Comic Book Central lair. Don't forget, you can check out the virtual lair at the website, comicbookcentral.net. You can catch up on all those past episodes. Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. And you can follow Comic Book Central on Twitter, where you can hashtag share the lair at comicbookctrl. Or subscribe to the show on iTunes. So we are out there and glad to have you on board today. We've got some new listeners as well. We're hearing that, so welcome. Welcome one and all to Comic Book Central. Starting off the show today with some sad news, unfortunately. As many of you know, legendary comic book artist and writer Herb Trimpe passed away this week at the age of 75. If you're familiar with Herb's artwork, you know it is absolutely stunning. And that's an understatement. Much of it coming out of a 30-year career with Marvel Comics. Truly, Herb Trimpe was one of the masters of the Bronze Age of comics. You've probably seen his work on any number of licensed characters. I'm talking G.I. Joe, Godzilla, Shogun Warriors, one of my personal favorites, Indiana Jones. You've definitely seen some of the best of Herb's art from his nearly 7-year unbroken run on The Incredible Hulk. That's amazing. That includes the first appearance of Wolverine, that's Hulk 180, and of course the follow-up issue, the iconic Hulk issue 181. That features one of the greatest comic book covers in history. Just a little bit more background, in the 90s when Marvel went bankrupt, unfortunately let a lot of talented people go, including Herb, he at that point turned it around, he got his master's degree, he went on to become a teacher for a few years, he taught art to the next generation. And Herb even received the Bob Clampett Humanitarian Award for his volunteer work at the World Trade Center after the 9/11 attacks. He was an amazing man. I was fortunate enough to cross paths with Herb a couple of times. First was almost two years ago to the date, where Keith Voss and I interviewed him for the IndieCast. And we talked about Indiana Jones. Of course, we talked about Indiana Jones and a bunch of other things in that interview, including the Hulk. You can hear both parts of that interview at theindycast.com. It's episodes 164 and 165. I'm going to put those links up in the show notes for today's episode of Comic Book Central. And the second time was something really, really special to me. I got to meet Herb in person last year at Connecticut Comic Con. In addition to being simply an incredible talent, he was one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. Got a chance to meet him there. He spent some time chatting with me and a bunch of other fans, and he just really took time. Just took time to have a conversation. I think even in the days before his passing, he was at a comic book convention. He was chatting with more fans. He was doing commission work. So right up to the end, he was interacting with the fans. So yeah, it's a bit surprising to hear about his passing, but good time to reflect on his work and to remember what was truly a giant in the industry and a class act that he was. So, hey, talk about bringing comic books to life. Hulk 171, one of Herb's issues, that was adapted into one of the old Power Records book and record sets. I've talked about that here on the show before. One of my favorites from the 70s.
Power Records presents The Incredible Hulk at Bay. As our story opens, the huge green mutant known as the Hulk has just rescued his friend, Betty Talbot, from the fury of an erupting volcano.
I'm going to put the link up. Power Record Blogspot has the pages and the MP3 online. I'm going to put that up in the show notes as well. You can listen to our IndieCast interview. When you listen to that, Herb definitely created the Hulkbuster unit back in the day during his run on the Hulk. Eventually, that concept became Iron Man's Hulkbuster armor. The reason I mention that is in a few weeks, we're probably all going to be going to see Avengers 2. So when you see the Hulkbuster armor, you see Tony Stark going toe-to-toe with the Hulk. Yeah, you can remember that. Herb also co-created the character of Psylocke. The reason I mention that, they just announced that actress Olivia Munn is going to bring that character to life next year in X-Men Apocalypse. So when you buy your ticket, you sit in a comfy chair at the movie theater, you kick back with your popcorn, you're checking out the Avengers, you're checking out X-Men Apocalypse, take a few minutes and think of Herb. We got some of these characters, we got some of these concepts because of him. So truly a legendary figure in the world of comic books, and he will be missed. All right, on to today's show. If you joined us last week, you know that we are right smack dab in the middle of a celebration of the wild and wacky, cheesy superhero fun fest known as Legends of the Superheroes. I've got four fun-filled episodes of Comic Book Central coming your way, featuring some of the talents who brought DC Comics characters to life on this two-part NBC special way back in 1979. If you haven't had a chance to listen to last week's episode of Comic Book Central, kick things off with the actor who brought Captain Marvel to life, Garrett Craig. He, funny guy. That is a fun episode. So last week we gave you some of the history into these two shows, how they came about. I also mentioned that you no longer have to rely on grainy bootlegs or some incomplete YouTube clips to catch these shows. You can get yourself a pristine DVD of Legends of the Superheroes from the Warner Archive at wbshop.com. Go get that. Put yourself in a goofy frame of mind. Watch it. It's a silly spoof. It's fun. It's the heavy hitters of the DC Universe. They're going toe-to-toe with their adversaries, those vile villains, in a zany send-up of our favorite comic books. Part 1, Episode 1, that was a Save the World type story. Part 2, as we mentioned, it was much, much different. My guest in the lair today, oh, kiddies, this is a big thrill for me. I grew up watching this guy's comedy. I still love it today. The hilarious Jeff Altman is going to be here. Now, I will say this. Jeff played the Weather Wizard in Legends of the Superheroes. When we recorded this interview, talking about the weather, it was a tad colder here in Ohio. A little bit more like the Arctic Fortress of Solitude. But we do talk about the weather, so don't think that Ohio in mid-April is as cold as I'm making it out to be. It's not warm, but it's not that bad. So check this out. It's a quick review of Legends of the Superheroes, and then I'm going to be right back to continue the silly celebration with the Weather Wizard himself, Jeff Altman. Legends of the Superheroes, the two-part NBC special, kicked off on January 18, 1979. Based on Hanna-Barbera's cartoon classic Super Friends, the DC Universe came to life as our heroes, led by Adam West's Batman and Burt Ward's Robin, faced off against the Legion of Doom.
Somewhere in a secret hideout located on a remote island, the arch-enemies of our superheroes have gathered to hatch a diabolical plot to destroy the world.
Also making a return appearance from the 60s Batman TV series was Frank Gorshin as the Riddler. He headlined a cavalcade of comedy stars, including Charlie Callis as Sinestro, Howard Morris as Dr. Savannah, Ruth Buzzi as Aunt Minerva, and an up-and-coming young comic named Jeff Altman as the Weather Wizard.
Remember last December in Fargo, North Dakota? Now that was cold.
How cold was it?
It was so cold that down at the mission on Skid Row, they were serving soup on a stick.
Jeff was born in Syracuse, New York. His dad was a sleight-of-hand master, and that was a skill that the younger showman in training picked up rather quickly. In the mid-70s, Jeff made his way to the West Coast, started his stand-up comedy career. He appeared on numerous talk shows and soon caught the eye of Hollywood producers. He landed an episode of Mork and Mindy starring fellow comic Robin Williams, and a year later, he was cast in the shows that we're celebrating today, The Legends of the Superheroes. Now, listeners, you might think that Liam McIntyre was the first actor to bring the Weather Wizard to life on the current CW hit show, The Flash. No, but you would be wrong, Acid Rain Breath. No, Jeff was the first, and in the first episode, The Challenge, Jeff inexplicably transforms into Honest Al, the used car salesman, and he tries to sell Batman and Robin a lemon when the Batmobile breaks down. Trust me, you just have to see it. In part two, it's a Dean Martin-style celebrity roast, and Jeff's Weather Wizard heckles our heroes with some comic book-style comedy. Following Legends, Jeff got his own short live variety show on NBC, Pink Lady and Jeff. He appeared on The Dukes of Hazzard as J.D. Hogg's nephew, Huey, worked alongside The Hoff on Baywatch. He got animated with voiceovers in Tiny Toon Adventures and The Real Ghostbusters. He produced and starred in two hit Showtime specials and was a frequent guest on David Letterman's talk show. But today, we are celebrating the time that he roasted our favorite superheroes.
Let's get right to our first supervillain, all right? He's a man who uses his special wand to control the weather for his own criminal purposes. The arch enemy of the Flash, and a rotten person in his own right, the Weather Wizard.
Now joining me now as we celebrate the legends of the superheroes is the man who roasted the heroes as the Weather Wizard, one of the founding members of the Legion of Doom, and one of my all-time favorite stand-up comedians. Ladies and gentlemen, the hardest working man in show business, Mr. Jeff Altman. Jeff, welcome
Good
to Comic Book Central.
Me.
Oh, this is going to be a tough one for me to get through. This is, I apologize in advance to the listeners. My goodness.
I think James Brown is still the hardest working man in show business.
I don't know if he is today. Yeah, I'm giving you that title. You've officially inherited it.
Bless your heart.
How are things in California, my friend?
Lovely. We have a nice day to here, clear sky, about 75 degrees, just right.
Oh, I envy you. I envy you. I'm in, yeah, the rest of the recording this, yeah, it's a little cold here in Columbus.
Yeah, you betcha.
Are you doing much traveling these days? Are you staying put? What's in the world of Jeff Altman these days?
Well, I just did a bunch of stuff. Where I was on David Letterman show, and then I went to Vegas for a week. And then I came home, and then I did a thing, a project with Alan Thick. He's got a new show coming up called Unusually Thick, and it's going to be on. And I played. I did a day's work with him.
All right, is like a fractured version of. Is this like Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of thing? What are we looking at here?
I'm not positive. All I know is I sat around a table playing cards, trying to be funny. And as you know, for me, that's always a climb.
I would have to disagree with that, but do you like traveling?
I used to. I really used to love it. You know, before all the TSA stuff and how hard it was to get through the lines and the huge lines and getting upgraded was easier and the old days were better for traveling. And those, you know, when I was in my 30s and 40s. I it was a different club every week. You know, I'd get up in the morning on Thursday morning and fly to Jackson, Mississippi and do the club there and, whatever club was inviting me in whatever city, I was on a plane.
Are you still having problems with any flight attendants?
Yeah, I always have one or two that bother me. Yeah, the last flight I was on, as a matter of fact, this guy came by and he, we were about at 3,000 feet and we were just coming in for a landing and I had been asleep. And I opened the shade and all of a sudden I see the ground below us about, 1,000, 2,000 feet. So I grabbed the flight attendant, and I said, "Listen, man," I said, "we're losing altitude." He said, "Please, we're landing, we're landing."
Oh, I'd love to be on a flight with you.
Man, I wish I had a dime for every time I've told that story on Dave's show.
I love it. I could hear it all the time. Hey, before you look, you're talking about David Letterman. Before we continue, I got to confirm. Every time Letterman gets a phone call on the set, that's you, right?
Pretty much.
Okay. How many characters are you doing on the phone? I love
these.
Oh,
man. I've done... Len Easton of the California Highway Patrol.
Give me a little bit of him.
Yeah, I'm like, this is Len Easton of the California Highway Patrol. We have two white Caucasians southbound and down on the Downey exit. You want to take them off again?
It's the dispatch that's funny because you can never understand what they're saying.
How did they get to where they're going?
I don't know.
This is ridiculous. Who else are you doing on the show? There's like, it's such a random event when this happens, but I just get a smile on my face when it does. When the phone rings, I love it.
Well, I do my character of Carl, the drunk.
Give me a little bit of Carl.
A little bit of Carl. Carl would call up and say,
Listen, Dave, I'm 69 years old, and I don't need it, bud. I'll flip you like a cheese omelet. I'll hit you so hard, by the time you stop rolling, your clothes will be out of style, and I can do it.
Oh, you know, look, this interview could end right here. As long as I heard flip you like a cheese omelet, I'm fine.
Oh, man.
That's classic stuff. How far back do you go with Letterman?
Dave and I go back to 1975. That's quite a ways. It's 40 years ago. And we met at the Comedy Store in Hollywood, and we became fast friends pretty quickly. And we used to play racquetball together until I hit him in the head with a racquetball racket.
Not the ball, the racket.
I hit him, not the ball, I hit Dave squarely in the head with the side of my racket.
Why were you that close to him?
I don't know. I was going for the ball, and I hit him in the head. And he said he got very scared. He thought he was going to have a hemorrhage and drop right there. I assured him that it wasn't that hard.
It doesn't have to be hard if you get hit in the head with a racquetball racket.
I suppose so, but, you know.
Yeah, I got to go with Letterman on this.
Dave's got pretty thick skin.
Oh, that's amazing. How many times have you been on? Look, is it 40? Not including the phone calls, but like 43 times? NBC and CBS.
More than that, actually. More like 50.
Wow.
Since the very beginning, since he was on NBC.
Yeah. And it's very tough to get to find somebody that actually makes Letterman genuinely laugh.
Sometimes I do, and sometimes I irritate him a little, you know.
I think your percentage is probably to your favor.
Well, yes, it is. I was on there a couple times ago, and I did a card trick. And that happens to be my avocation, which is close-up magic.
Yeah.
And so I'm reasonably pretty skilled with a deck of cards. And I did this trick, and, you know, because he's known me for so long, I've told him certain things to watch out for in card tricks. So as soon as we start the trick, he goes, "Wait a minute, is this the thing where I got to pick a card?" And, of course, I say, "Oh, my God." Like you go home to your wife and say, "Dude, I had to pick a card." And he really started laughing pretty hard.
He's trying to pick it apart as he's going through. But I think at the end of it, you pretty much amaze him.
Yeah, it's a pretty good trick, the trick I did. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's out there. Let's check. We can all check it out. I thought he made an interesting observation that both you and Johnny Carson were magicians, drummers, and comedians.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty interesting.
I wish I'd had the opportunity to know Johnny better than I did. I think we could have had some good times. We also both enjoy tennis, and those would be the, I guess, three or four biggest things in my life would be tennis, drums, magic, and stand-up. And the same thing was true with Johnny, just coincidentally. But we never got to do any of those things. I mean, I met him several times, was on the show with him, I did have a little magic session with Johnny.
Okay.
In 1992, I believe, at the Affiliates Convention in New York City, Johnny came on to announce his resignation, but nobody knew. Nobody even knew why he was there. And he was standing around, and I was wearing sneakers because, of course, at the time, that was, you know, was the hip thing to do. And he looked over and he said, "Geez, Jeff, are those the only shoes you could find?" And I said, "Sorry, Johnny." And I had somebody go get me a deck of cards, and then I kind of sidled up next to him. And I said, "Johnny, you ever do one of these?" And I did a card move really badly and purposely. And he said, "Why don't you come here and let me show you what I do?" And we just had a great time. It was about 10 minutes we spent backstage together and doing card tricks. And it's something I will never forget as long as I live.
Did you ever get to do your impression of Johnny Carson for Johnny Carson? Because that's always
I certainly did. I did it both on the show once and... In a nightclub. He and I both were very close to a drummer named Buddy Rich.
Yeah.
And Buddy Rich was playing at the Comedy Store one night back in the 70s, I think. Maybe about 1978, 79. And I was going on in the Comedy Store. And in the other room, in the big room of the Comedy Store, Buddy Rich's band was playing. Well, somebody told Johnny that there was someone doing him in the comedy room,
which is the original room of the Comedy Store.
Part of your act that night is doing Johnny Carson.
Well, I was on stage, and I'm saying, geez, Doc is not here. Ed is not here. Who's here tonight? And this voice over at the side of the stage goes, you know, I don't think you're doing that exactly right.
Oh, no.
And it was Johnny, and he came up on stage, and I whispered in his ear, I said, do some time. So he did about 5 minutes of material. Everybody
told Carson to do a set?
He did a little set.
Oh. Your brain just has to be exploding at this point.
Oh, my God.
That's it.
I was beside myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, when he got off the stage, I thought I had a pretty good follow-up line. I said, I bet you folks didn't know how strong an opening act I carried.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. So,
oh, that's great.
I've had a few experiences with Johnny, but never where we sat down and played the drums together or played tennis, and I certainly would have loved to have done that.
The guy was a legend. And, I mean, I guess that's the thing for a comedian is just, you know, to get that sort of seal of approval. You know, when you're doing – because I guess there's that nervous edge, like, is he going to be okay with it? You know, is he going to be upset that I'm doing his voice?
You know, Joe, when I was a kid, 22 years old, I came out to Hollywood, and you know, it was everybody's dream to do stand-up and get on The Tonight Show. I mean, that was kind of the – you know, it wasn't, I'm going to come out and do stand-up for 4 months and then I'll have my own series. You know, the real zenith of fame as a comedian was to be on The Tonight Show, because back in the days when I was first doing it, you could change your career overnight.
That was the thing, Johnny – especially if Johnny calls you over to the chair.
Oh, yeah.
Or the couch.
Or even gave you the
little wink.
The okay sign.
Yep, the okay. That's right. Yeah, you know you made it.
And then you know you didn't make it if you heard this. That was Bob Gilner, and we'll be right back after this.
Oh, Bob's not making it on the next episode.
Yeah, Bob's never going to see that set again.
No, Bob's selling used cars.
Right.
Hey, Stranger Project, Legends of the Superheroes or Pink Lady and Jeff?
Boy, I don't know. That's a good question. I have certainly attached my name to a lot of projects that were questionable in content. Pink Lady and Jeff, though, was actually I did that after I did the Legends of the Superheroes.
Yeah, was it the following year?
I did that was 1979, late 1979 and 1980 that I did. And Fred Silverman came with the idea of these two Japanese girls who were in Japan like the Beatles.
Yeah, they were huge.
Yeah, they were really huge. People didn't realize how huge they were.
Yeah.
Even after the show had run five times, they didn't realize it.
Stadium. They would fill stadiums.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just like the Beatles. And they tried to put a show together with two girls who couldn't speak English, and I was kind of the narrator, and it was a tough job. But we had some very funny sketches, and I got to work with some wonderful people. I got to work with Jerry Lewis and Sid Caesar and a slew of other people. Jim Varney was one of the regulars on the show, as was Anna Mathias and some other people. It was really a good cast, good writers, and you know, we did the best we could with what we had.
Yeah, I'm blown away by this. I think what was it? Six episodes it lasted.
Five, I think, aired.
Five aired. I think there were six total. And I'm looking at the guest list on this. It's everybody. I don't know how you got that many people. This is the era of variety shows. They're singing, there's dancing, there's comedy sketches. As a comedian, that just had to be the biggest palette that you could imagine of just go nuts and do whatever you want.
Well, yeah, only it wasn't that, because it was a primetime show on NBC, and you had certain parameters that you had to stay within, of course. We tried to, at least a few times get close to the outer edge of the envelope, but it was 8 o'clock, I think, on Saturday night. And so you couldn't do too much nutty stuff, but we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun, and the guest stars were amazing. It was just the problem, Joe, is that the era of that type of show, of the variety show, had kind of come to an end, and David Letterman was beginning the new form of television.
Yeah, the sort of snarky, like the anti-Hollywood, the anti-television.
It was anti-TV. It was, and I was doing the quintessential television.
Right.
So there was no, it was easy to see why that show got canceled, and Dave went on to become a big, big star.
The man who says he was doing quintessential television. In one scene, we've got BJ and the Bear, Bear being the cigar-smoking monkey, Hugh Hefner right. and the Playmates, Pink Lady in bikinis, Jeff Altman in a hot tub.
Boy, what, you can't ask for more, could you?
Give me a break. There's some anti-TV right there. How did this thing not make it? And then another one, Teddy Pendergrass, Sid Caesar, Larry Hagman, Pink Lady in a bikini.
It was always pink ladies were in bikinis and we were in a hot tub. And I was in a hot tub. At the end of the show, we hired this wrestler guy, this sumo wrestler dude, to chase me around the set for no damn reason. And at the end, he wound up kind of in the hot tub with me, and I noticed that nobody wanted to go in the water after that ever again.
Yeah, this may have warped 13-year-old Joe Stuber's brain a little bit.
Yeah.
It was strange. Wow. It's a strange one. Another strange project, and one of my favorites, one of our favorites here at Comic Book Central, Legends of the Superheroes.
Oh, sure.
Okay, you played the Weather Wizard. Until the recent pilot episode of The Flash, the current Flash that's airing right now, you were it as far as the Weather Wizard. I mean, the Weather Wizard is in that pilot episode, but up until then, live action, you're it. So when did you first hear about this project? Did you have to audition for it? I know there was a casting call.
No, I didn't have to audition. I can't remember, Joe, if I auditioned or not. I
know there was like this ad that went out that they were like looking for superhero types.
No, I didn't respond to that. No.
Okay.
But I got a call from my agent, either sending me to an audition that I got, or I got a call saying, would Jeff Altman be interested in doing The Weather Wizard? And, of course, I to work with the guys that were there, just to do a scene selling cars to, Batman and Robin was worth my time.
That goes on the resume right there. Had you already done, like, Mork and Mindy at this point? Like, you were sort of... And they're on their radar at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I had I was just starting to get kind of well-known, and I had a deal at NBC, and, people were starting to kind of notice who I was, along with Letterman and Leno and guys that were, went on to become huge stars.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you were definitely out there. You were on their radar. Did you know anything about comic books, superheroes, The Flash, these characters? Did you know anything about that world?
Not a tremendous amount. I wasn't a comic book reader as a kid, per se. But I spent most of my time up until the age of 14 in jail. So
doing hard time, were you?
Yeah, I was doing time.
Boosting cars?
Yeah, that's right. Selling cars to Batman and Robin.
If you'd only read comic books, you'd have stayed out of the slammer.
I know it. But working with Adam West and Burt Ward was a lot of fun. I found them to be very pleasant people, and we had a lot of fun that day. I remember doing this whole car sales thing.
How were they about coming back? Because they had been away from the roles for quite a while. I mean, it had been...
Well, they certainly weren't old. You didn't say to yourself, oh, my God, these guys don't look anything like what they used to. They both looked great. And, everything, I think, with them worked.
Yeah, it did. I mean, they kind of came back. And it was already campy. So,
yeah,
you kind of had that. Frank Gorshin.
Tremendous.
I mean, did you get to work with – there's a comedy mind right there. I mean, especially when – even in within the show, he's going from character to character. He reminds me a lot of Robin Williams.
I can say this, that I knew them both, and not to disparage the Riddler in any way, but none of us were Robin Williams.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a different level. But I mean, as far as just like sort of that accessing almost the stream of consciousness comedy of just bouncing from character to character.
I didn't see that too much from Frank Gorshin. I got the feeling that most of Frank's material was kind of prepared and thought out and well-developed. It was just, he was like the first guy who is David Fry, who was I was a huge fan of. You remember David Fry?
I don't, no. Give me a little bit of prep.
David Fry was one of the great impressionists of the 70s. He came along. He was the first guy that kind of did Nixon. Do you remember a guy that did Nixon?
Yeah.
That was David. He did Nixon, and he did political impersonations.
Okay.
Impressions. He did Lyndon Johnson and Hubert Humphrey and William F. Buckley Jr. and all kinds of different people. And he was really great. And he always told me, he said, you know, he sounded like Nixon when he talked. He said, you know, you must become the person. It's very important, Jeff, that you become the person. And certainly Frank Gorshin became the person he was doing when he did it.
Did you get to pick his brain at all, like on the set? Did you get to talk to him?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I got to know Charlie Callis a little better, I think, than I did.
That's the other one I wanted to ask you about, because these guys were just nuts.
Well, that wasn't my first run-in with Charlie Callis. I was on a show in 1976. I don't know if this is the right time to invoke the name, but it was the Bill Cosby Show.
Well.
And he rode around in a tennis sneaker, and it was mostly a show for kids. It ran opposite Disney on Sunday nights. It was only on for about 6 weeks. I was very, very good at getting on shows that only ran less than 6 weeks.
Good work if you can get it, if you can just keep getting them.
That's right.
What was Callis like? He seems nuts.
Yeah, he's goofy. He's he did something. Do you know a comedian named Tim Thomerson?
I've heard the name.
Yeah, he's a good friend of Dave's, and has appeared on the show in several circumstances. But he is the funniest comedian that I ever saw. And even funnier than I think Robin. And Tim, who later went on to become the star of movies like Trancers and a bunch of other films, he was one of the really solid B actors in this town. I mean, you know, he did everything. When I was on Nurses in the 90s, he came on and did a guest star on that show. He was on everything, and he starred in many movies. He was a tremendous talent and influenced me a fair amount. And Charlie Callis, he was on the Tim Thomerson was on the Bill Cosby Show with me, and Charlie Callis came on and did a guest starring role, and he made Tim Thomerson and I laugh so hard that we hit our heads together, and boogers flew out of our nose.
Tim Thomerson is Jay Allen on the 90s Flash.
Wow.
There you go. There's a little comic book trivia for you.
The 90s version.
He was
right.
I think it was the older brother that died in the pilot and inspired the Flash to become the Flash.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Kind of a good-looking guy, kind of rugged California surfer.
Yeah, very good-looking guy. And the Incredible Hulk Returns, too. Thank you, smartphone.
Yeah. That's yes.
as I'm searching IMDb. It's a whole different world, my friend. Let's talk about this crazy, crazy, crazy show. What was it like to be on there? You talked about the used car lot. This is Honest Al's used car deal. For some reason, the Batmobile's broken down. The Batmobile broke its wheel.
Right.
They're out at Honest Al's used car dealer. You're Honest Al. Well, you're the weather wizard in disguise.
Right.
Where did you shoot that? It looks like it's out in some canyon somewhere.
Yes, exactly. It was in some canyon. That's correct. I'm trying to remember which canyon it was. It may have been Topanga Canyon.
Okay.
Somewhere out in some canyon. I do remember that. And for my age, That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Did you write your... Now, we got two shows. There's the challenge, and then there's the roast. So you right. come on, and you do this roast. You get to do Carson. You get to do all, you know. Did you write your set for the roast, or was that already written for you?
No, I believe it was already written.
Okay. It's a pretty tight set.
Yeah, it was. I've looked at it, and it was okay. I mean, it wasn't the funniest thing in the world, but it was. It did put words in the guy's mouth for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I got some laughs. It was okay.
It's a roast. It's for kids.
Right.
It did its job. I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, watching it now, I can still like it. As we're recording this, horrible weather in the Northeast.
Right.
Another blizzard's coming on the way. We're supposed to be getting a foot of snow. What would the weather wizard think about all this crazy weather that's going on right now?
Well, you might say something like, geez, this is crazy, but it's so cold.
How cold was it?
It's so cold that I saw an Eskimo pie wearing a parka. I don't think I said that on the roast.
I don't think so. We get the deleted scene here.
Yeah, I'm writing again.
I just love the whole Carson match game kind of thing,
Yeah,
it's good
absolutely.
Stuff. It's good 70s stuff. Favorite moments on these shows? I mean, you talked about Adam West and Burt Ward working with some of the actors there. I mean, what was it like to just put on a costume and just be like a supervillain?
It was great. I'll tell you, this is a personal story. I had met my wife in the unemployment line. This is my first wife, who is still one of my best friends. And her name is Leslie Ackerman. She's an actress, if some people remember her from the many roles she's done over the years. She's no longer an actress, but she was a terrific actress when we met. And I was deeply in love with her. And I remember wanting desperately to get off the set and get back to her house for, some camaraderie. And
thank you for keeping it family friendly.
Yes, and this was before we were married. I did the superheroes just before we were married. I think the superheroes was done in January of 1979. Is that possible?
It was January 18th and 25th, 1979,
right.
I believe they aired.
And I was married in April 29th, 1979. So I was hot and heavy for this woman, Leslie Ackerman.
Who ended up being on an episode of The Incredible Hulk.
Absolutely.
Oh, we should
have your IMDb going there, man.
I do. Thank you for buying me some time. Well, it's a very cool project, Legends of the Superheroes.
Absolutely. Let me say this about it. I had a tremendous amount of fun. I got to work with Howard Morris, one of the great talents of all time. And when you talk about comedy and television and the history of television, Howard Morris comes right to mind. And by God, there he was on the set.
I'm glad you brought him up because he, the late, great Howard Morris, he played Dr. Savannah
right.
On there. But a lot of people remember him as Ernest T. Bass from The Andy Griffith Show. He's the one.
Yep.
He's one of these guys has like a cadence, this voice that you just know it.
Yep.
And he does this whole shtick where he just like hits all the superheroes. I mean, he just goes through them. And it's brilliant comedy on there. Just getting to work with some of these greats. What were you able to take from, we talk about Charlie Callis, Frank Gorshin. What do you take from all these people as you're sort of absorbing this as a young man as you were on the set?
Well, it's like a place called the Magic Castle last night, which is the Mecca on the West Coast for magic entertainment. And you have to be a member, and it's kind of expensive to join. And it used to be back in the 70s a very private kind of out-of-the-way club that was just very unique and very classy. And last night I was up there, and I was sitting with my friend Steve Freeman, who when I was in the middle of being out there in the 70s and the 80s, was considered the best sleight-of-hand card man in the country. And we were sitting there last night watching some of these younger guys and the stuff that they did, and we were just amazed, and we both remarked how if these people had been around 40 years ago, which, of course, they couldn't have been because time hadn't elapsed for them to happen, But had they been around 40 years ago, we all would have been amazed. Well, I was the youngest guy, I think, on that set.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Superheroes. Yeah. So I was looking at another generation of guys, all of whom I respected, but a new wave of comedy was coming. And I think I was part of that new wave, and it didn't separate me from the rest of those people because, as I said, I was just, you know, I felt lucky to be working with some of them, especially when I was on Pink Lady, too.
Yeah.
You know, to work with Jerry Lewis is just, you know, I mean, it, you know, I don't care what you may think about him, but to work with him is just tremendous.
Oh, he's a legend. Yeah, I mean, you talk about some of these things. And what's nice
about...
Well,
I worked with Howard Morris and... the Riddler and all the rest of the guys and Bert and you know it was you know I was kind of the new kid on the block, so I didn't force myself on anybody. I just kind of stood around and watched, and I was mighty impressed with the level of performance that you got from guys like Howard Morris.
Yeah, and it's easy to kind of write some of these projects off and just say it's a kid's thing or whatever, but these guys, like, really threw themselves into it.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Yeah, they're committed. And we can watch it now. It's on Warner Archive. The DVDs are out there. We can order them. There's official release. So, yeah, it's out there in all of its 70s glory for us to watch. And what's cool is it actually led to some very cool projects for you. Baywatch, Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard happened at about the same time. I played a recurring role on that show. I played Boss Hogg's nephew, Huey Hogg.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, if somebody asked me what the best experience long-running, and none of my stuff in show business has been long-running, that's been my problem, I think, with my career. But... I did 6 episodes, I think, of The Dukes of Hazzard.
Right.
Every season, they brought me back and did a whole show around Huey Hogg.
Yeah,
and that was maybe the most fun I ever had. That was really—you were really in show business when you were doing that show. Not because the show was complex and interesting and sophisticated, but because they used directors that directed the Lone Ranger shows. They used old directors that really knew what they were doing. You were out in what looked to be the Old West. In this case, the backwoods of Georgia, but it was the backwoods of really Westlake, California. And you really had to act. You had to really learn your lines. You had to really be on top of it.
And you got to hang with a Hoff on Baywatch, our original Nick Fury.
Yep, there he is, man, the Hoff.
Yeah, it's just amazing. What's it like to be on Baywatch? I mean, that's a juggernaut show.
Well... most of the time I was on Baywatch, all the blood rushed to the center of my body. So, it was hard concentrating. You had all these beautiful girls around
you. Again, thank you for keeping it family friendly.
Did I do that?
You did. Close enough.
Oh, thank you. It was a great treat because they really, the guys that ran the show trusted me, and they would bring me back every season as either the same character or a completely different character.
Yeah.
I played I think 2 or 3 different characters on that show.
Well, and the coolest thing about this is that I think, we talk about this off air, is that I think Hasselhoff and Adam West, talk about Adam West earlier. They found a way to like create the characters out of themselves. They figured out how to make like the Hoff or pure West. These guys have figured out a way to do that to avoid the typecasting by just taking it head on. So it's kind of cool. You get these shows out of it.
Well, I place myself, Joe, in the category, certainly far below, but in the same category as Jonathan Winters, Tim Thomerson, Robin Williams, kind of frenetic, high-paced, energetic characters, impressions, everything you can do to make an audience laugh. And I put myself in that category. And I remember Jonathan Winters once said to somebody, he says, if you do too many things, you don't always get hired, you know what I mean? I had a 26-year-old kid from Paramount come up to me the other day and say, what have you done lately?
To Jonathan Winters.
The greatest of all time.
Right. Yeah, well...
The greatest of all time.
That kind of puts...
The Muhammad Ali of comedy.
Robin Williams' idol.
Well, no question about it. I had a famous person whose name I won't mention, but I had a very famous comedian tell me that you could have every comic who is famous come up on stage and do their best 5 minutes, and Jonathan Winters would get up on stage and at the end of the show make them all look like idiots.
I believe that. Yeah. Well, I mean, you watch even the stuff he did on Mork and Mindy. It's just like they're just making it up half the time.
Half the time.
Yeah, it's just amazing stuff. How many stand-up dates do you perform a year, would you say, at this point?
Oh, I would say with respect to stand-up comedy, I'm fairly semi-retired, you know. I do the Letterman show frequently, 3-4 times a year. And then after that, I usually go over to Las Vegas, and I do a club there called the Laugh Factory, which is in the, I don't know if I'm allowed to say where I go. But
plug away and tell us your dates.
Thank you. The Laugh Factory at the Tropicana Hotel, it is truly the best comedy club in Las Vegas, and not because I perform there, but because it's better run, I think, than any other room. It's run by a comedian, and he books the room, and everybody loves him. And it's just a really great venue, and it happens to be the Laugh Factory.
Now, have you found yourself at this age, and look, I'm not saying anything about your age at this point, but I did grow up watching you. So
I'm 77 years old! Listen to me! I knew Richard Pryor! I knew Jerry Lewis! Holy Jesus! Oh, my God, I go to the bathroom. Hold on.
I'm not saying anything about age, but you
I'm
have...
not old. I'm 63. You know.
Well, okay, but you've old. Okay. Here's my point. You've done some bits about your father in the past. Was it Arthur? Was your father's name Arthur?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You've done some bits about him in the past as a 65-year-old man. You're
right.
Okay, as you've said, you're close to that.
And you're wondering, as I approach that age, what do I feel like?
Well, okay. Is it a little strange to you to approach this age?
Well, here, let me give you a perfect example, Joe, of what happens to you as you get older.
How high are your pants, Jeff Altman?
Right now, I have to pull down my zipper to drive.
Have you become your father?
No, not exactly, okay. But in some ways, you know, my
give
father.
Give me a little bit of your dad. I got it.
A little of my father.
Give me a little bit of your father. Like, what was life like growing up for you?
He'd say to you, look, Joe, let me tell you something, friend. I don't know why you got my kid on this show. You're a big outfit. My kid's nothing. I saw his stand-up act the other night. It was just a bunch of crap. That was my dad. But actually, my dad was a handsome, tall, very articulate, beautiful voice, and he was a magician as a hobby, and he managed somehow to become one of the best card men in the world.
Yeah, I do know that about him, so that's kind of where you picked that up.
Yeah, I picked it up from him, and he picked that up from his brother, and his brother was one of the heads of MGM starting back in the 1920s. And was one of the people my uncle Al Altman discovered: Joan Crawford, Jimmy Stewart, Lucille Ball, Bob Hope. Gave them their first screen tests.
Wow!
So I have quite a legacy to meet up to.
I think one of my favorite Arthur Altman lines: "I'll slap you in a payday."
Oh, I'll slap you in the payday. The one Letterman always used to like is, come here, friend. Look, buddy, I'll beat you like a rented mule. And Dave always said it conjured an image for him of me beating a rented mule, and it made him laugh.
It's good stuff. Yeah, it's classic stuff. Like I said, it's, you know, it's amazing. So how can fans find out more about you? You on social media? Are you out there
tweeting? I don't do much of that, Joe. You know, the best way to know about me is to go to YouTube and look up Jeff Altman, or specifically Jeff Altman on David Letterman. That's a pretty good way to get to familiarize yourself with who I am. Or you can go back and watch episodes of Pink Lady and Jeff or The Legends of the Superheroes.
Oh, they're out there. Yeah, Warner Archive just released the DVDs not that long ago, so they're out there.
Or old episodes of The Dukes of Hazzard. You know, it's strange. You know, the Dukes of Hazzard was never considered to be a prestigious show, even though it was number one or two in the ratings every week.
Yeah.
You know, because it was supposed to be, but they had some of the best actors in TV on that show. Sorrel Book, who played Boss Hogg, was a Yale graduate of the Yale School of Drama. He was just, James Best was, as you know, Sheriff Roscoe P. Coltrane. You remember that?
Every Friday night was the Incredible Hulk and Dukes of Hazzard for me. Every Friday night. That was Friday night for me. I didn't get out much.
You know what, Joe? the evening that I premiered Pink Lady and Jeff, it premiered across the same time slot, different network, from the Dukes of Hazzard, and the Dukes of Hazzard ran a Jeff Altman, Huey Hogg episode that night. So I was playing against myself.
Well, look, at least you lost to yourself.
I guess so. That's a good way of looking
at it. There's a great way of looking at it. You lost to yourself. Who better to lose to than Jeff Altman?
I suppose.
That's the way to do it. Hey, Jeff, I said this when we started. I told you off mic. I grew up watching you. You're one of the comedians that taught me what funny is. I have to say that. I am so appreciative of all the laughs over the years, and I thank you for joining me on the show today.
Well, I thank you, Joe. It's been a real pleasure, and hi to everybody out there listening.
Viva Las Vegas. As Jeff mentioned, he often appears at the Laugh Factory in Vegas. No, he's going to be appearing there pretty soon. That's at the Tropicana Hotel. Here are his next dates. Write them down if you want to check out Jeff Altman in concert. May 18th through the 24th, Jeff is going to be appearing at the Laugh Factory in Vegas. I'll put the link up in the show notes where you can get tickets. If you get a chance to see him, go see it. Jeff's comedy is top-notch. I love the guy. Too bad Letterman's retiring. I'd love to see him on there a bunch more times. I love watching those two together. Hey, who knows? Maybe when Colbert takes over, he's going to have Jeff back on. Look, he'd be wise to have him on. He's a great talk show guest. My thanks again to Jeff for being on the show today. If you can't catch Jeff in Vegas, like he said, go get some of his stuff on DVD. Dukes of Hazzard. You can go get the Dukes of Hazzard DVDs. Maybe you can have your own tribute to the late, great James Best as Roscoe P. Coltrane. We lost him recently. Pop the Dukes DVDs in. Watch some great comedy. Those are great episodes. Or you can head over to the Warner Archive, as we mentioned earlier. Order the Legends of the Superheroes DVD at wbshop.com if you haven't already. I'm going to put that link up in the show notes. My thanks again to Jeff Altman for joining me today on the show. Really appreciate it, and I really appreciate you playing along as I attempted to play Ed McMahon on the show. And hey, thanks to all of you for tuning into Comic Book Central each and every week. I appreciate it. If you're a new listener, you can catch up between episodes by heading over to the website. It's comicbookcentral.net. All the episodes are there. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Download them all. Take them with you wherever you go. Be sure to give us a like on Facebook. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. And some of you are doing this. I really appreciate it. Hashtag share the lair. Tweet me on the Twitter at comicbookctrl. Again, much appreciated. If you like Legends, let me know. If you don't like Legends, let me know. If you've never seen it, let me know. If you're getting the DVD, give me a shout. joe@comicbookcentral.net. Or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, comicbookcentral.net. Our buddy Rick Myers did just that. Rick runs the blog, The Recovering Uber Geek. He wrote in and said, I enjoyed Garrett Craig's episode. I miss those specials. They came out when my dad was stationed on Adak, Alaska. The Armed Forces television was mostly older shows. I will check in to see if I can rent them, if not purchase them. Captain Marvel is a hopeful and whimsical character. A little camp works with him. Oh, thanks for writing in, Rick. Always good to hear from you. As I mentioned, you can order up some Legends goodness for yourself over at the Warner Archive. And not just that, they've got a bunch of great classic and not so classic TV over there. A lot of things. Man, I could spend all day on that website. There's a ton of stuff there. So check it out. None of these shows are lost to time as long as the Warner Archive is around. All right, folks. Sounds like there's a storm brewing. The weather wizard must be ticked off about something. So I'm going to head for shelter, but I will be back soon because next week on Comic Book Central, more Legends Lunacy. The Legends of the Superhero series continues with the Scarlet Speedster. more than a decade before the CBS series, more than 3 decades before the current CW series, the fastest man alive appeared in the flesh on NBC in the form of actor Rod Haas. Rod was also on board the Battlestar Galactica, and he appeared in a very cool comic book themed movie with John Ritter. It's one of my favorites, called Hero at Large. He's Captain Avenger. He's the Flash. He's the heroic Rod Haas, and he's going to be joining me in the lair next week. Until then, let's hope the Weather Wizard clears things up for us. You keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Imported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
This will just take a second. Let me get to this. Yeah, hello.
This is Carl from sales.
Hi, Carl. How you doing? I need
to run down a few things with you.
Great. Let me put you on hold for a second, okay? Hang on.
Yeah, put me on hold. You son of a... Who am I?
Whoa. How can I help you, sir?
First of all, 2 days ago, I was at the Price Club loading up on underpants, and Alex Trebek tried to kiss me.
Yeah. I think I read that in the Times.
Yeah, I think he'd been huffing paint, you know. He's kind of cute, though. He lunged on me. I said, knock it off for 50, Alex.
Uh-huh.
Listen to this, okay?
Yeah.
Next, I order 6 of them fancy chopping machines I've seen on TV.
Oh, know, yeah.
Julian-style vegetables.
Right.
And so listen to this,
right.
Okay? Listen to this, bud. They didn't send me the Grady. Can you believe that? No damn Grady. Your perfect toppings for tacos, nachos,
yeah.
And quesadillos.
Yeah. It grinds up the cheese, right?
Yeah, where's the damn Grady?
Yeah.
I want the Grady. Look into that for me, will you, you goofy bag of gas?
Yeah, all right. So you need one Grady. I'll get right on that. Thank you.
Yeah. Let me ask you something.
Right.
You ever take a run at that Barbara Walters?
Okay, I think we're about out of time, honestly. Thank you very much.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you. Woo, woo.
Okay.
Oh, Billy, the cat's in.
Everything all right, Carl?
Yeah, everything's all right here. Or somebody at the damn door again.
Okay. Well, nice of you to call. Thank you. Good luck.
Woo, woo,
oh.
Woo, woo.
Wow. Carl from sales.
Yeah.